Blog Talk Radio.
I'm talking about Motown Maurice right down here in the state of Florida.
And we've got Motown Maurice of the Motown Maurice Show.
I'm going to introduce you to Motown Maurice.
We have special, special, special guest Motown Maurice.
Motown Maurice.
Speaking of crazy, we have Motown Maurice,
a man who is trying to put Tampa on the map for late night television.
He is not the next Arsenio Hall. He is the first Motown Maurice.
For those of you who haven't had a chance to experience Motown Maurice,
you have to understand he is very persistent.
And now he has transitioned
from Tampa to Los Angeles, California.
He's now in Los Angeles.
Continuing his pursuit of the quest of a late night talk show host.
Keep an eye on Motown.
Absolutely.
Keep an eye on that gentleman. One day this man is going to be the new face of late night.
Motown, we love you.
Motown Maurice, are you on the line?
And now, your host, Motown Maurice.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being seated, ladies and gentlemen. I'm so happy to be here. Welcome to the Motown Maurice Hustle and Shuffle. This is the very first episode. For those of you that don't know me, my new viewers and my new followers, thank you for tuning in. And please know that I am the future of late night television. Yes, that's right. I said it, and it's the truth. So much more about me to come. But, ladies and gentlemen, I recently decided to start this new talk show on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm really excited about it. As some of you know, I just transitioned from Tampa, Florida in September, and people have the impression as though I still have a show. I had a live show in Tampa, Florida, and I get so many people trying to be on my show. I said, you know what? You want a show? Let me give you a show. Let me give you a show that's going to promote the artists, the filmmakers, the writers, everybody in Hollywood trying to hustle and shuffle. So this is the first show, and I'm really excited. I'm even more excited because I have a very special guest that is on the line patiently waiting to be interviewed. I'm so excited. She's so dazzling. She's so gorgeous. And there's just so much to talk about. She's so ambitious at the same time. She's actually very, very attractive, too. I'm going to ask her if she's single, but that would probably be very inappropriate for this show. But anyway, let's move on. My very first guest has had co-starring and principal roles in Paramount's pictures, The Mancurian Candidate, daytime dramas, One Life to Live, and All My Children. Most recently, she wrote and featured in an independent film called Halfway Where. Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for actress and screenwriter Stacey Newsome Santiago. Put your hands together. Please, please put your hands together. Where my audience at?
Thank you.
Are you on the line?
I'm here. Thank you. So glad to be here.
Oh, man, thank you very much for being on my show. I really, really appreciate it. You are the first guest for the Motown Maurice Hustle and Shuffle, so this is history in the making.
It is. Do I get a star or a plaque on your wall or something like that?
Well, you're going to definitely be embedded in the cyberspace world, so when they Google our names, our pictures are going to come up. In the meantime, we're going to work on that plaque. Does that sound like a plan?
That sounds like a really good plan, and I absolutely believe that you are the future of late-night television. I can totally see you in that arena completely.
Oh, thank you so much. You're just saying that so you can get a guest spot on my show when I do get the show. Are you just saying that, or do you really mean that?
No, man, I mean it. I absolutely mean it.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much. But this show is all about you because I want to promote what you're doing. You are so fascinating and interesting. You got so many things going on. I want to talk about your broadcast career first, because it just so happens I have a degree in broadcast journalism. And let me tell you, before I graduated, I knew right there in the classroom, I actually had the little job where I was doing the teleprompter. I knew very early that I did not want to work for the broadcast industry. I ended up starting my own business. But you actually worked in the broadcast industry for quite a few years. Tell me about that.
I did. You actually have more guts than I did because I had the same thought. My final semester in school, I had a journalism professor talk about how in order to succeed as a journalist, you needed to have that fire in your belly to eat and breathe news day in, day out, 24/7, and I woke up from my nap and was like, huh? What did he just say? fire in the belly? What's that about? but I ended up going into broadcasting. I started out as a newspaper reporter through a lot of, you know, very good breaks that I got and people giving me, you know, wonderful opportunities. So my first year out of school, I was a print reporter for a Scripps Howard paper. And the year after that, I went into broadcasting and spent 8 years as a television reporter.
Wow. And you enjoyed that? You enjoyed being a reporter?
There were a lot of days that I did enjoy it, and there were a lot of days that were just real bummers, you know, talking to people who have, you know, lost someone close, people who suffer tragedy. When you have a good day in news, it's a bad day for someone else. The people you're having to interview, it's a bad day for them. So, you know, that wears on you after a while, and you really start, at least I did, started to lose a little bit of my connection to people and a lot of sensitivity, and that's one of the reasons I left it.
Yeah. When I was going through it, I was like, look, if I'm going to work for the broadcast industry, they might as well provide room and board for me at the same time because you practically live at the station. I just wasn't having that.
Mm-hmm.
I was not having that. But you also had some principal roles in The Mancurian Candidate. That must have been really exciting.
It was exciting. I had the wonderful opportunity to play a news reporter in The Mancurian Candidate, which was directed by the wonderful Jonathan Demme. So I had the wonderful chance to work with him and Meryl Streep and Liev Schreiber and many other wonderful actors, and that was my first professional acting gig. So, yeah, can't hate on that, can you?
You can't. And then you've done some daytime dramas. You're just all over the place, and I love it. But you know what's most fascinating to me is that you pursued television, you've done some feature films, and now your heart is in an independent film. And it's like, wow, I would think that somebody who is pursuing television and feature films, theatrical films, they want to focus and stay there so they can be in the big glamour in life, but you have a real strong passion for independent film, and you actually wrote and you're starring in Halfway Where. So I'm so excited about talking about that. You wrote it, you're starring in it. Please tell me how the idea for this independent film came along.
Okay. Well, a little bit about the film first. Halfway Where is about a woman who had a professional career at one time who moves to Los Angeles, and as far as she's concerned, she might as well be moving to Mars. And she finds herself so upside down financially and emotionally that she has a choice between sleeping in her car or checking into a halfway house for recovering drug addicts, female recovering drug addicts, for the cheap bed. So she chooses a cheap bed, and the movie is about what happens to her while she's living there, how she really spends most of her time disconnected from the other women and how those women are trying to reach out to her, and how she basically, in many ways, needs the help, you know, the emotional rehab more than they do. So it's about how this woman is trying to connect back to reality.
Wow. So what is the place called? It's called, I'm reading here, it's called the Sober Living House? A Sober Living House?
It's a Sober Living House that that she lives in. And the idea for the film actually came out of true circumstances. I myself had taken a cheap bed at a halfway house down in the Crenshaw District. This is about 2 years ago. I just moved to L.A., and things were really tough for me when I first moved here. So my choice was sleep in the car or take the cheap bed. So I took the cheap bed, and it was one of the most wonderful and at the same time one of the worst experiences of my life. And out of that experience came the inspiration for this film. This film is not a documentary. It's inspired by true events, but it's inspired a lot, inspired heavily by true events.
Wow, this is some real-time stuff. I was watching the trailer, and it just seemed intense. I could just imagine the different type of people that you had to live with. You know, can you describe your roommates, I would say?
Sure. Well, the setup of sober living facilities, I don't know if anyone who's listening has ever had the fortunate opportunity to visit one or live in one, but it's basically communal housing. You don't have your own bedroom. You share the facilities with other women. You share your bedroom with a number of other women. I shared my bedroom with sometimes one, two, up to three other women, and it was, you know, it was interesting because we all shared one bathroom. In the house total, there was anywhere between 6 and 10 women living there at one time. So we all shared a bathroom. And these women just came from a completely different walk of life than I did, you know. And I had a lot to learn, and I didn't realize this. I had a lot to learn when I moved in there. It, you know, like I don't want to say that I was a spoiled brat when I moved in, but let's just say that I had to learn to carry my weight around the house. Wow. Just with, you know, we shared household duties. We shared kitchen duties. And, you know, in my mind, it was like prison. I'm like, oh, my gosh, what have I gotten myself into? But, you know,
like
you come and go
of,
as you.
I'm saying, it sounds like a lot of sharing. I didn't have to share toothbrushes or anything like that. Nothing personal, just living.
just a room. We had to share a room. But, yeah, it was a lot of. There was a lot of sharing, a lot of cooperation that had to go on, and eventually I felt like I was adopted by these women because some of these women had come from the street, literally had been living on the street and, you know, had checked into this house because it was a place for them to get off the street. Other women had come from abusive backgrounds. Maybe they'd been living with an abusive spouse or an abusive mate. And, you know, it was these women were basically had come to a place where they adopted me because they knew that I didn't come from the same circumstances. And I was there kind of like, oh, my gosh, you know, what am I going to do? And they just really sort of formed a protective bond around me to kind of look after me. You know, it was like, you know, like I was their daughter or something because many of them were quite a bit older than I. So it was a very interesting set of circumstances.
So I would assume that a lot of these women were on drugs, obviously. Were they still on drugs or getting over?
Well, let's put it this way. It was a sober living house, and the rules were that you had to be sober in order to live there. And I'll just leave it at that. I'll leave it at that. I saw some things and heard some things and smelled some things in the middle of the night that, you know, I'm not schooled enough on that culture to comment on.
No celebrities that were going through rehab was there, you know, Whitney Houston or Lindsay Lohan. You wouldn't happen to agree with any of them.
Oh, yes. Lindsay was my boo, man. We shared that room. No, I'm kidding. No celebrities. However, one of the requirements of living in the house, if you did have a drug problem, was that you had to go to AA. And I would hear all the stories from people who were going to AA about celebrities who were in their AA meetings. So, yeah, they encountered celebrities.
Wow, that's serious. I can only imagine it was probably real frightening at times to be there. Did you sleep with your purse, like, you know, clutched to your chest at night?
Well, let me think. I'm going to be honest with you. Before I moved into that house, I had a crazy roommate situation in which I felt less safe there than I did living in the halfway house. So, like, I was living with this crazy Haitian woman, not to be disparaging to crazy or Haitians, but, no, she was off her rocker, and there were a couple of nights I slept with a knife under my pillow, and I never had that experience in the halfway house. I never felt in danger there, even though it was then, you know.
Who had the knife in their pillow?
Me. I did. And this was with a previous roommate situation. This wasn't in the house. So I'm saying I felt safer in the house than I felt with a previous roommate, you know, in a normal circumstance.
Well, I'm glad you trust yourself, because just imagine if you had a nightmare of your own, and, you know, who knows what you might do with a knife at night. That's serious. That's a knife in your pillow?
LA has been rough.
It was wearing a rug?
LA has been rough, man. LA has been been a hard ride.
LA can make or break somebody. I realize that. You know, times are getting kind of hard for me. So as you, you know, continue to succeed, I need you to look out for a brother. Because, you know what, it's funny that you're mentioning these type of houses. Like, I'm in a blessed situation. But, you know, blessings don't always last forever. And they sometimes run dry. But, of course, you can get more blessings. So I started to research some different places to live. And I've seen these ads, $25 a night, or $100 a week. And I actually, literally, this was last Friday, I went and then I checked out a house, and it's a big house, all kinds of different people living there, and they have, you know, open beds. I'm just like, Lord, is this what it's going to come to? Whatever. So as you're talking, it completely reminds me of what I just experienced last week. So that's why I started this show, hoping that, you know, you can hook a brother up, because I know success is all around you.
Well, you know? Let me tell you, they had a men's facility right next door, so if you want to check into a halfway house for a cheap bed, I can definitely hook a brother up for sure.
I'm trying not to go that route, but who knows? But LA is,
you know,
like, make you or break you. It's not going to break me, that's for sure, but it's going to put me through some interesting stories. And I'm not worried about it.
It will try you, that is for sure. Well, funny you should bring that up, because we've screened the film around town a little bit, and unexpectedly, people have been coming up to me after viewing the film and saying, you know, this is really resonating on a deep level with me, you know, just what people are willing to do to pursue their dreams, you know, the situations they'll place themselves in, you know, just to have a roof over their heads at night out here. Or, you know, other people have gone through a halfway house situation. And so, you know, this film is resonating with people on that level, on that, you know, how you will basically put up with anything to be able to stay out here in L.A. and pursue your dreams. And on another level, you know, people are resonating with the level of disconnect this character has having with the other characters in the film. And so people relate to that, too. A lot of the film, the main character, she spends in her car, just, you know, rolling around L.A., just, you know, she's like wet spaghetti that she throw on the wall. She's trying to find, you know, something that'll stick for her. And she spends a lot of her time in the car disconnected from other people. And so that level of disconnect is resonating with audiences as well.
Nice. So, speaking of connecting with audiences, let's connect with the actual making of the film right now. So, from what I've been told, you actually use real patients, real people that were living in the houses for the making of the film?
Yes, we did. We were very blessed. And I don't want to add to that, the time I spent living in that halfway house, which was 8 months, was a blessing. It was complete blessing to be living there, just from the things that I learned and just, you know, the fact that it was a place for me to stay when I needed a place to stay. About 6 months after I moved out, we were getting ready to go into pre-production, and my director and I were like, well, how are we going to find, you know, a place, a location that looks like a halfway house? You know, we had a very limited budget. You know, we didn't have the money to go out and rent a house and do set design on it to make it look like a halfway house. So I called up the owner of the house and I said, listen, this is what I'm doing. I'm doing a film that's, you know, basically based in reality about the time that I spent living at your house. And it's not a negative portrayal, but we need a place to shoot. Do you have any other properties like this that, you know, may be less full that we can use? And she says to me, if you want to go over to the house and shoot it, just let me know, and I'll make sure, you know, all the residents know what's going on, and they'll be good with it. And that was that.
Just like that.
Just like that.
That is wonderful. So what are you trying to accomplish with this film? What is your main goal? Are you trying to send a message, or what's your main goal? What's your trying to accomplish?
Well, my main goal is multi-tiered. On the level of, you know, from an acting perspective, as an actress, I made this as a showcase for myself because I don't want to get, you know, too political or too racial or anything, but as an African-American woman who, you know, is just trying to get her foot in the door out here in L.A. It's very hard and it's very competitive. And ever since I started in this business, I've heard the advice, make your own projects. Make your own projects. That's the only way you're really going to have a shot of being noticed. Make your own projects. And it didn't really resonate with me what that meant until I had something to say. So, you know, on level as an actress, I'm using this as a showcase to get myself noticed and hopefully to open more doors for me as an actress. As a filmmaker, you know, I'm just trying to connect with people on any level that I can reach out to them. With this film, it's about being disconnected from other people out here in Los Angeles or in life in general. It's about, you know, conditions living in communal circumstances. You know, you don't have to live in a halfway house to know what it's like to have, you know, bad roommates. You don't have to live in a halfway house to know what it's like to have to share everything, you know, to never have any privacy. You don't have to live in a halfway house to know what it's like, you know, to do whatever it is that you need to do to pursue your dreams or pursue what it is, whatever it is you're meant to do. So I'm just really trying to connect to viewers and the listeners, you know, on the level of a filmmaker.
How did you build the team? How many people were on your team? Was there anyone significant in the making of this film that was on your team? And how did you pull these people together? I mean, it's just amazing how, you know, you bringing this to life.
Yeah, well, the team originally started out as a team of two. That was myself and my director, Gary Tepperman. And when Gary and I decided that we were going to do this project, he pulled in his team that he'd used on a previous project of his called Saving Rent. Saving Rent is a web series that can be found out there online, www.savingrent.com. That's a 12-episode web series that basically harkens back to the good old days of the 80s and, you know, sitcom that came out of that era. It's a really good little web series. But he pulled in the crew that he worked with on Saving Rent. And from there, it just grew. You know, people who are trying to get into the business, who are serious about getting into the business, are very willing to donate their time, willing to donate their energy or their equipment. And we had a small budget, very, very small budget. So we used that budget to rent, you know, professional equipment, professional lighting. It was a professional job all the way. So, you know, we used the resources we had that was basically through donations, a little bit out of pocket, and then all the wonderful people who donated their time. And also some of the residents who were living at the halfway house, they worked on the crew too. They got to learn some things about filmmaking. They learned what long hours you put into the making.
It was a good time to be living there, huh?
Yeah, it was. We used some of the residents as extras on the film. We even gave one of the residents some lines. She had a great time with it. She was a better actor than I was. I was like, wow, this is your calling.
I know, right? So listen, the film is complete. It's out. I noticed on your blog you're promoting it. You're promoting it on your website. I believe you also have it in a film festival. How is the process of competing with a film like yours in a film festival? And also, I want you to tell the viewers and the followers out there how they can support your film, whether it be donation or just purchasing it.
Okay. Well, right now, I don't know if we're in a festival or not. I've submitted it to a few festivals. I've submitted it to the Chicago International Film Festival, the New York International Film Festival, among others. I'm waiting to hear if I get into those or not. So,
okay, well,
you know,
I just spoke it into existence. It's going to happen. I know you're going to get one. Just put me in the credit.
I hope so. We did get into a trailer festival, which is where my director met you, as a matter of fact. That was very recently, last weekend. And people can support my film on a number of levels. They can go to my website, which is StaceySantiago.com, that's StaceySantiago.com, and there's a link to the film on my site, and it'll take you right there. Or you can go to my Facebook page and, you know, hit me up there and tell me, you know, hey, I support your film. You can also go to the fan page for Halfway Wear on Facebook, which is, Halfway Wear on Facebook.
Nice. So how are the social networking sites? Are they working for you? Are you getting a good response?
Well, let's see. I'm mainly using Facebook and Twitter right now. And, you know, whatever other ways that you can think of social networking-wise to help me, that'd be awesome. But, you know, my friends are, you know, supportive of the film, and, you know, I post links to the trailer and to the film as my signature and my email so that anybody who hasn't had a chance to look at it, whom I'm communicating with through email, you know, they have the opportunity to visit it that way. Social networking is wonderful. You know, it's how I basically raised the money for the film. So, that's how that's been working for me.
I know the journey of promoting and getting your film out there is sometimes longer than you ever imagined. And I know that you got so many more roads to go through, and I could see success all around this film just by watching the trailer. But what I want to know right now is what's next for you? What's next?
What's
on
next?
Your agenda? What you want to accomplish next? I mean, what do you see in your near future?
Well, my goal when I came to L.A. was to pursue acting. So I'm really concentrating on acting right now. I have a commercial agent and a theatrical agent. And I'm pursuing co-starring roles on television and film. And, you know, if this film can take me to the next level, which I hope it does just by, you know, getting as many eyes on it as possible, then, you know, that would just be a blessing. And, you know, I hope I'm on the right path. I hope I'm on the path that the Lord's put me on as far as, you know, career-wise and how he can use me, you know, professionally. So we'll see. We'll see. I see myself, you know, pursuing more television work. I really love television. I love the hours that it entails to create a television program, to work on a television program. That's my first love is TV, so I'm hoping this film will help me in that arena.
Well, based on what I know, you know, your television and movies, that may not be your only calling. I mean, you've been getting into a little comedy lately. I want to know a little bit about that.
Yeah, how do you know about that? You must have been doing your homework.
I'm a little birdie, so I can give you all my...
Yes, I have been exploring stand-up comedy as an outlet for, you know, my artistic side. And it's been really interesting. You know, really good comedians, really good comics make it look so easy. It's like they get up on stage, they tell jokes, people laugh, and that's it. That's not it. It takes a lot of preparation to make people laugh. So I'm studying the art of comedy. And I had my first show a week ago Wednesday, and it went really well. So I'm very proud to say that it is something that I'm enjoying. And, you know, I'm using that as an arena to get me noticed as well. It's, everything that I do is in servitude to what I'm trying to accomplish out here in Los Angeles. So,
wow.
You know,
so you got a good response. Did anybody boo or throw eggs and tomatoes at you or anything like that?
I'm very fast. I can duck very quickly, so I did not get hit with any of the tomatoes or the rotten eggs. No one threw anything at me. Not even a boo. No one threw a boo at me. The audience was very supportive. I was happy. To hear that the jokes that, you know, I knew were funny got laughs. Up until that point last Wednesday, I'd only performed my material at open mic in front of other comedians, and comedians are a hard crowd to ring a laugh from, let me tell you. you got to twist comedians to laugh at your material because they're listening to your jokes in a different way than an audience listens to it. So, you know, they're studying the anatomy of your jokes. They're not just there to be entertained. So, you know, if something might be funny to them, they're not going to laugh out loud. It just might be a, like that. Like, that's funny. That's when you know something's funny to a comedian.
Yeah. But I'm sure, it was just delightful looking at your beautiful, gorgeous smile. I mean, I'm looking at your pictures, and I don't see how I could, you know, not like anything you're saying. So I have to come see one of your shows. I'm serious. I have to come to one of your shows. I have to get into some stand-up myself, so I definitely, maybe I can join you. We're running out of time, so one last time, please tell the viewers where can they find your work, your films, and everything that you're doing.
Yes, my website as an actor, www.stacysantiago.com. That's Stacy with an EY, santiago.com. You can look me up on Facebook under Stacy Newsome Santiago. That's N-E-W-S-O-M-E. And
all right.
either one of those links will take you to the trailer or the film Halfway Where.
Excellent, excellent. Well, thank you very much. Give her a round of applause, ladies and gentlemen. Give her a round of applause. All right, and that's going to be it for the show. I hope the show didn't cut out yet, but I know 30 minutes has passed. But ladies and gentlemen, we thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Stacy Newsom Santiago. We greatly appreciate you. And I hope to have you back next time. You have been listening to the Motown Maurice Hustle and Shuffle. Until next time, you can check me out at MotownMaurice.com.
Thank you.